Good afternoon. Today is Tuesday, January the 7th, seventh day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, Mr. McCauley.
Hey, Brian. Happy New Year.
And to you, sir. It's been a rough one so far.
Yeah, you're fighting it.
Yeah. Go from one challenge to the next. It's just, I kind of feel like I ought to have loincloth.
It's all uphill. It's all downhill or
it's
uphill.
It's uphill.
From there. Take your pick.
Good. The old plumber analogy. So early. Mm-hmm. This afternoon, we'll spend a little bit of time talking about some of the things that we normally talk about in January.
It is January, isn't it?
What do you need to be looking for? Some of the changes, what the impacts may or may not be. We'll do it when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and Information Times, 314. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill McCauley. But before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from Finley Peter Dunn.
Finley?
No D.
Finley Peter Dunn.
Freedom is like a drink. If you take any at all, you might as well take enough to make you happy for a while. I guess.
So is that drinking advice or?
I think that's called responsibility. Yeah. I don't know. What do you got there that you talk about responsibility? And I suppose that there are still those who claim that taxes is an illegal activity, and we'll try to file that way. And if we set that subgroup
aside.
You mean
the frivolous filers? Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't ever want to have the IRS accuse you of filing a frivolous tax return. That puts you into a pot that boils quickly and hot.
Ton of bricks in the mix.
Yeah, I had a client one time get a letter that, you know, that the IRS accused him of filing a frivolous tax return, it was interesting because it was stupid. But I called the IRS and I remember this day the person I spoke to, and I don't know where she was, but she was really great. And she said, I will walk this down to that unit and I will follow up tomorrow and I will call you with the resolution on it after we spent, you know, I probably had 2 or 3 hours on the phone. But anyway, the representative from the IRS was Miss Love. And I've never forgotten Miss Love because she did a phenomenal job dealing with that. You know, it's kind of a scary thing when somebody gets a letter and says, hey, you know, I mean, taxpayers don't necessarily know that, but in tax parlance, a frivolous filing is kind of a.
It's about as serious as you can get.
Yeah, you're in the IRS's sights.
One of the lower circles of Dante's hell.
Yes. There you go.
Yeah. Okay. So if we want to avoid that.
Yeah, we do. We totally want to avoid that.
What are some of the things? I suppose a lot of folks, Bill, ask or they're curious about some of the tax software programs that are out.
Mm-hmm.
Last year at this time, we were truly in limbo. This year, we're not seeming to be in that same place. Are some of these online services, some of these boxed things, are they good indicators? If you've got a real basic return, is this the way? Is this an option for folks to consider? Should we be spending time getting books and looking to see what all of our potential discounting mechanisms might be? Where do you kind of start looking at what you should be looking at?
Keeping in mind that I get paid to do tax returns, and so I may have a little bit of a bias. There are software packages out there that are designed to kind of help people through doing a tax return. A lot of them, you know, the most common ones that we probably all can think of, they kind of work through on a questionnaire basis, if then kind of deal, where And, you know, the challenge with those kinds of things is they work pretty well or they can work well in normal situations. But if something's a little bit out of the norm, that software is not designed to detect that. And so, so sometimes
it's got a grid, but they're wide squares.
Yeah. So, and so, yeah. And I'm not saying, you know, you might be fine. You might be able to file that way for several, you know, for
an
a period
easy
of time.
Form. Is that something that typically would be able to be handled?
Should be
that
able
way?
To handle it. Should be able to handle it. Should be able to, you know, but, and actually I've seen, you know, people do relatively, you know, returns with some complexity on them. And I've seen some of them right. And I've seen some of them wrong. So that, I guess it depends on your confidence level and whether, you know, whether you're willing to take, there is a little risk there. That's not to say that a tax professional can't make a mistake too, but there's certainly a different kind of risk associated with using an off-the-shelf product.
Well, let's back it up a step and look at books and textbooks. You know, you've got like the, what is it, for dummies, blank for dummies, okay, tax returns 2014 for dummies, worth the 10 or 20 bucks to kind of cruise through that and see what.
Yeah, J.K. Lasser has a book that's pretty commonly observed in the, and I think that there's some value in that simply because it's a source for information about taxes. Even if you're not doing your own return, you may want to know. You may want to have information and feel like you're informed. I've got some clients who come in and they bring their stuff and they are they're very well informed and they ask excellent questions because they've taken some time to inform themselves. There's different ways of doing that. You can there are websites where you can get information. Google. Is not authoritative from a tax research perspective, but sometimes it's a good indicator. You know, it's kind of a I've done that sometimes where it's like, gee, that's kind of a weird one. I'll just Google it, see what Google says. And sometimes that'll kind of send me down the right road when I go into our relatively expensive and robust tax research software to find out what I need to find.
It's 3:19.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. If you've never been to Eureka's Sequoia Park Zoo, or haven't in a long time, you're in for a treat. Eureka is one of the smallest cities in the nation to have a zoo, and quite a zoo it is. It's among the redwood trees and specializes in a variety of small animals. Many exhibits have been updated, with more on the way. A big favorite is the red panda family. If you think of pandas as black and white, big, and chewing on bamboo, think again. Red pandas are small with reddish coats and white faces. Watch them scamper on their trees. The pink flamingo flock will dazzle you as you pass their pond. There are many more zoo pleasures awaiting young and old alike. There's a cafe and gift shop, too. On Wednesdays, all visitors come in at half price. For days and hours, see their website, sequoiaparkzoo.net. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill McCauley. Bill, so if we have some of the different tax reference areas to go to, if we look at last year's tax returns, presuming that they were done properly and thoroughly, is that also a good starting spot?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's an excellent place to start. A matter of fact, most paid preparers are effectively starting from that point. A lot of paid preparers send out an organizer or another document in advance to help people begin to accumulate information. There's generally comparative totals from the prior year in there. So if you had interest income from Redwood Capital Bank, it might show up there as Redwood Capital Bank, and you might have, in the 2012 column, it might show the meager amount that you earned off your savings account or whatever.
You mean there's a bank that's paying interest?
Yeah, there are some. Yeah, they don't pay much, but they do pay some. But the point is that comparing to last year is a great way to work in your to start on your taxes. If you want to start thinking about what kinds of things affected my taxes from last year,
were there any significant changes from last year to this year's returns as regarding what would or may not qualify?
Well, there's some big things that are out there in different forms. I mean, you know, we can all talk about, you know, we're going to spend a lot of time in our case, we're going to spend some time talking to our clients about healthcare this year, because that's likely to be a big issue next year. But there's also some other changes that occurred last year. And if you'll remember, in early, like the first week of January, the first couple of days of January, we had a law passed that kind of dealt with some of those things that were hanging fire at December 31, 2012. And some of those changes are going to have an impact, and they're most likely to have an impact on you if you're in a higher income tax bracket. The reason for that is there was a lot of some tweaks to income tax brackets that will certainly have an impact. There is a new tax this year related that's going to affect higher income taxpayers that is part of the Affordable Care Act, and it's that's going to have a new impact. So, and you know,
impacting the returns that are going to be due in April.
That's correct. So there, the you know, as you start to look at these things, and you start, as an example, Brian, the last, I don't know, 8-10 years, probably since 2002, the maximum tax rate for capital gains was 15%. The maximum tax rate for dividend income was 15%, qualified dividend income. Well, under this law change, if your income goes up to a certain threshold, then the maximum tax rate is going to be 20% for those two things. So that in and of itself could have an impact. When you factor in that the top...
You can't go with three-year averages on this either.
No, there's no income averaging. Okay. When you factor in that the top tax rate went from 36% to 39.6, there, for people in the upper income brackets, you could see where they're going to have, if they've got significant capital gain or qualified dividend income, they could have a 5% increase on that. For their other non-preferential income, the ordinary income, rents and wages and things like that, the maximum tax rate went up from 36 to 39.6, so there's a potential 3.6% bump. There's also a
10% increase.
Yeah, 10% increase of the total, 3.6 on income. And then you've also got the Medicare tax increase that came with the Obamacare. So if you look at, there's different studies out there, and basically in California, because we have California rates are up, you could have an effective tax rate of 50% if you're in those top tax brackets, subject to all this stuff. And so, and that's a pretty big jump from a year ago, when you figure that's probably going to be at least on the order of a 7 or 8% jump on over the previous year.
So that really is a double. It's a 14 or 15% increase.
Yeah, it's. I mean, you know, if exactly, it's double. If you're talking about going from 42% to near 50%, it's a big increase.
So obviously, the game is on then to try to figure out how not to pay more than what your fair share is, or more than what the government says is the proper amount.
Yeah, fair share is an interesting term.
Yeah, that's why I backed it off.
It's all very subjective, and we talk about it a lot. It's an interesting term, because
I think the fair I'm thinking of is FARE.
Yeah.
It eliminates everything then. I mean, nobody gets too concerned about one or the other.
But right.
Yeah, I know the other one is the one that tends to be the one applied. So those are the primary changes. Does California or Oregon have anything other than what going on at the national level?
Well, the California tax rates, you'll recall a year and a half ago, we had a pretty sizable increase. You could be up in the 10, 12, to almost to 13.3% for California tax purposes.
It didn't go up?
No.
All right. KINS, News and Information, Times 3:30.
A decade of difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast. This is Jim Ritter with Humboldt Live in the Arcata High School Career and College Center. Do you have life and work experiences that could be of benefit to our local youth? We're recruiting community members to mentor and share ideas with our middle and high school students. please call me at 839-5114 for more information. The Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and information time is 3:36. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with noted CBA Bill McCauley. Bill, as we start getting kind of halfway geared up towards compiling the information. Yeah, now some folks do it during the football playoff season, depending on whether or not their team is playing or whether or not their team is playing.
Yes.
Plopped in front of the tube trying to feel as if they're doing something productive rather than just sitting there being mesmerized.
Yeah. Or for some of us, because our team is playing, we're too distracted to.
That could be part of the equation also. Yeah,
that's probably the McCauley portion of the equation.
Okay, well then the other day.
Yeah. Yes.
What are some of the common things that we ought to be looking for? Or, you know, we normally say look for this stuff. How about we do the flip? What don't you need? Out of all the stuff that is in your binder or in your box or in your bag or spread all over the floor, what are the things that you really don't need to meet to include?
Okay, you probably don't need bank statements because you're going to get a 1099 that's going to report the interest income. You probably don't need brokerage statements. So if you got an account with a broker, you probably don't need the brokerage statement. You probably just need the year-end 1099 and annual summary that they send, hopefully sometime by the middle of February. This is a different way of thinking, and you know that's a challenge for me. You don't need every receipt, but it's sure nice to have a place to put them all. So you don't necessarily if you're gonna use a professional to do your tax return as an example, then summarize those things and paperclip them together or staple them together, and you've got them all in one place.
So, what are the ones of that pile? What are the ones that are of interest, and what are the ones a grocery store? I would imagine most of the grocery store receipts probably are not of interest unless you purchase something specifically for the birthday party at work.
Well, if you purchase, maybe you volunteer at church and you volunteer with the youth, and you. They're going to have a kids' activity, and you go out and buy.
You buy the soda that.
You buy the soda that night. You buy the cupcakes, or maybe you buy snap peas or whatever it is. The snap peas you'd have at the end of the night.
This must be a McCauley connection here somehow.
It isn't, but I'm trying to think healthier because it's a new year and my
apples?
Yeah, there you go. So those things would be an in-kind charitable contribution, Brian. And so you would want to keep that receipt and have it available. It's very important, and we've talked about this before. When it comes to charitable contributions, if a contribution or a series of contributions is more than $250, you have to have a receipt, and it has to be. You have to have it before you file your tax return.
A receipt, or you have to have the receipt with the letterhead of the entity?
Yeah, generally, you are looking for a letter of acknowledgement or a formal receipt.
You buy snap peas 10 months of the year for the youth group.
Yeah.
Okay, and it comes in at $100 and you've done stuff.
You just keep copies of the if it's under $250, you don't have an issue. Okay, if you can support what you've
claimed. But if that's added into, let's say, the weekly stuff that you may do,
then you might be over. Okay. The other thing you can do is you can go to that entity, whether it be a church or whether it be some other, a little league or whatever you might be donating goods to, and you can get them to issue you a receipt for those items that you may be donating on their behalf. I mean, there is specific language that's required in that receipt. Statements that include such things as no items of no personal benefit was derived from
Johnny
no
didn't tangible start in center field because
yeah no tangible yeah, personal benefit was derived from that contribution.
Now, that stuff you can find in those textbooks or the Lassiter or websites and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, you can.
Or get close enough to count?
You can, but you shouldn't be completing the receipt that the charitable organization should be, and hopefully they've got sophistication to be able to have the right language.
Yeah, some do.
Or
some
if not, then they may need somebody to push them in the right direction. So, it's just important right now to start thinking about those things. You know, you don't need all of your pay stubs to do your taxes. You need the W-2 that's given to you. Now, there are times where there might be something on your pay stub that would be significant. As an example, sometimes it gets a little difficult to see if you got union dues withheld from your pay stub, things like that. So sometimes you may actually need to have a pay stub. But in general, most of us who get a paycheck, which I actually don't, but most of us who get an employee paycheck don't need to have those pay stubs. We just need to have the W-2 that we get sent to us by January 31st.
So we've eliminated some of the stuff. What about things like utilities? If you don't have a home-based business, is there any reason, any thought for the, I guess, PG&E or, you know, pick your utility company, or phone bills or water or sewer or any of those things that are household stuff?
Probably not a lot of value to those in the long term. However, if, as an example, you're trying to establish that you're a resident in a state, you need to be able to produce things like copies of phone bills and those things that would energy bills and other things of that ilk. So if, as an example, and I don't know if the signal gets to Nevada, but let's say you're living in Nevada, and or maybe you're here 2 months
booming
a year or 3 months a year, and you live in 9 months in Nevada. Well, if you used to live here full time, and now you've relocated to Nevada, you may need to be able to demonstrate to California, as an example, that you no longer are a full-time resident here in the state of California. You're no longer resident in California. You're resident somewhere else. And that's kind of an all facts kind of a test. So you want to be able to establish, yeah, I paid, these are the utility bills I paid, and I've got, you can see I've got 9 months where they're higher and 3 months where they're lower. And that, some of that could have to do with seasonality. So, I mean, there's
preponderance of evidence.
Right. But if you can show your driver's license and you're voting there and things of that nature, these kinds of indicators that a person would have that, hey, I reside somewhere else,
speeding,
then it would be
speeding
important.
Ticket?
A speeding ticket? Well, that may or may not be indicative if you have a lot of them.
All right.
I'm thinking of a friend of mine who he's probably not listening, but he has a lot of them.
He has a lot of them. Good. Out on 80, huh? Just let it rip. KINS, News and Information Times, 343. We'll be back with more from Bill McCauley.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon. KINS, News and Information Times, 347. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill McCauley, who might be having technical difficulties here in the next 30 seconds.
It is possible.
Yeah, yeah. Or maybe I'll just continue being the guy carrying it. So, January, you mentioned already, we should be receiving some documentation by the middle of February, some by the end of January.
Correct.
Are there any goofy things we need to be paying attention to, or is it more the same as what the years historically?
A lot of the same. A lot, you know, there's some similar blocking and tackling that a person has to do, and it's not necessarily fancy or new. It's, you know, not the Hail Mary. It's just, okay, I need to make sure I've accumulated this information and summarize it in a way that it's useful and that I can understand it if I have to figure. You know, one of the challenges we have is we all face this. We're working on something now, and we make notes to ourselves, and it all makes sense the moment you do it. But, you know, when you go back sometimes a few months later, or God forbid, a couple of years later, it's hard to figure out what was I doing? What did this note really mean?
And you're questioning my note taking abilities.
Yeah, Brian, I've read your writing for a number of years, and you are a inveterate note taker. But
I'm glad you can read it.
Yeah, legibility.
Yeah, ish.
Yeah. I remember doing a football game with you a number of years ago, and you pointed to something for me to say, and you'd written it, and I'm like, I don't know, I can't read it.
But since then, my penmanship has gone straight downhill. So are there any major snagolies we will typically run into as we're trying to compile the information, if it's more than an easy form?
Sure. I mean, the big deal is getting is trying to be complete. And some of the things, it's hard to know if you need to accumulate it unless, I'll give you an example, medical expenses. Well, they're deductible to the extent they exceed 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. Well, what's your adjusted gross income? You don't know until you get further along. So do I start accumulating this stuff or do I not? And, you know, many times there's no benefit. No, you know, if you don't have, and by the way, that's a great thing when you don't have any benefit from medical expenses, because a lot of times it means you didn't spend that much money and you had a healthy year, and that's a blessing. We ought to celebrate that as well.
So a rule of thumb for folks in the majority of the categories of income: $10,000. If it's over $10,000, pay attention. If it's over $5,000, pay attention. If it's underneath those figures, it's probably not going to come into play.
Are we talking about medical expenses?
Medical expenses.
Well, the rule is 7.5% of your adjusted gross. So if you make $50,000 in salary, then, and that's your income.
But not knowing what the adjustments might be.
Well,
in that case, if you're over $5,000, kind of start paying attention to it, or don't throw the stuff away.
Right.
Hold on to it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, because it certainly seems to save about 3 hours for me.
The
prescription costs and all those types of little things.
Actually, I think the medical, for me, that's the hardest thing to summarize, you know, out of my personal expenses. I mean, you know, it's actually the most challenging thing, because you end up having to segregate it a little bit, you know, prescriptions versus doctors versus hospitals and dentists. And anyway.
And the lobotomy.
Yes. And the head extraction.
Yes. Thanks for coming by, buddy.
Bye.
We've been Talking Shop this afternoon with Ben McCauley. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out, make it a good day, and so we'll see you tomorrow.